Hey everyone, this is Devendra here. So we thought it would be fun to let you guys listen to our post-Apple event chat. Sherlyn and I did this on YouTube pretty much right after their spring media event ended, and it was a good rundown of the news, and we also answered some questions from our live audience. So here, take a listen and let us know if you want to hear more things like this on the Engadget Podcast channel. As always, you can subscribe to the Engadget Podcast on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. Please leave us a review on iTunes. That's super helpful. And if you want to join us live for chats like this, we typically record Thursdays at 10 a.m. Eastern. So I'll let Sherlyn take it away.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for joining us on Engadget's post-show following Apple's spring-loaded event that just wrapped up around 2 p.m. Eastern. Thanks for joining. I'm Reviews Editor Sherlyn Lowe. Joining me to break down the news with you is Senior Editor Devendra Hardwar. Hey, Dev.
Hello. We are very tired and very, very exhausted right now.
We rushed right here to be live with you guys to break down all the news. And we're just here to kind of go over what Apple has announced, but also to take your questions and see what answers we can provide for you. Devendra.
Yes.
How are you feeling right now?
I don't know. It's just after every Apple event, right? It is just a mad rush to get all the details, everything down. There's some big announcements. There's some smaller announcements. Do you want to do this in order, Sherlyn, or just in order of what you find interesting?
Let's go in order. I mean, I think Apple did it in some sort of logical order too, right? The smaller stuff.
Some quick
front,
announcements.
Right?
One thing, I noticed that I don't think we're going to be covering, but they didn't announce that thing about Apple Cards, right? Where partners, your spouse, can have an Apple card on your family account. I just want to just quickly shout out, that is a really interesting thing because no credit card company has ever done that. Right now, actually, I pay for a Chase credit card, right? And my wife has a card too, but that card is tied to my account and my credit score, so it doesn't help my wife at all because of our crappy credit system in America. So it is kind of cool that there is this new way of doing it that actually splits the benefits of earning more credit to both people who have the card. So I just wanted to shout that out. But
I thought that was interesting. I think not really an Engadget news thing from our point of view. And I think that's why we skipped covering
it.
That's
a good consumer good, basically. That is a big upgrade for a lot of people. Yeah.
I mean, maybe it'll draw more people into Apple Card. But
I think so.
Definitely a more real user problem. But here's another interesting thing that Apple announced at the top of the show. A new purple iPhone. I thought that was cute. I don't know. What did you think?
Sure. It's fine. It's purple. It's purple.
I love seeing Apple get into the color game. Let's be honest. I mean, when they did green for the iPhone 12 and 12 mini last year, I was very taken. I think that more than anything, that aesthetic drew me into the iPhone line. I wouldn't have considered an iPhone maybe otherwise. I don't know. Or because the mini was so cute.
I mean, aesthetics mean a lot. And Apple has known this for a while, right? Since the very first iMacs and the original iBooks and all those computers. But this purple is just a little weird because it's it is a little pastel. Whereas I think all the iPhone 12 colors are more bold and more regular colors. So
the green is pretty muted too.
Yeah,
so
that's
I think,
true.
Yeah. On the side of the pastel and muted colors, the purple seems to fit in nicely with the green and maybe the white, I guess. And then there's the other side of the picture, which is more bold colors, like you said, the red. The yellow.
I got my I bought one for my wife. It's her first iPhone, and I got her the red, and she really likes it. But hey, if I had the choice of this purple one, she'd probably like that too. It's cool.
I can poop twice a day. Gay has mentioned a few times now that the purple looks like S21's color. You're not wrong. I mean, Samsung obviously has done purple phones in the past, not to mention Huawei, OnePlus, a number of Chinese and Asian phone makers. Apple is just kind of, I guess, doing its own take of these colors, which is nice. But we're not going to linger too much on the purple iPhone. We have a lot
to
go over.
Let's talk about AirTags. How about that? What do you think? Because it feels like this was announced 3 years ago, or no, rumored for a while, right? The idea that we would be seeing these sort of what's the name of that tag?
Tile.
Very similar to Tile, except tied into Apple's ecosystem. We knew they have these U1 chips, right, which do nearby connectivity and can tell you how close devices are to each other. These are just little Apple pebbles you could put on your devices or your keys or whatever to track things. I think it looks really cool. I'm going to order some immediately for my keys. Maybe
you're
going to
get
a
4-pack for $100?
Everyone's going to be buying these things because the idea of finding something locally, like, hey, not only this device is 10 you know, feet away from you, it's as you walk towards it, it's very like localized distance. At least the UI we saw in their trailer looks really cool mm-hmm. and very responsive. So I think this is going to be a pretty big thing with a lot of people.
Yeah, I will say that Tile has already sent emails out to journalists and reporters saying that they plan to be testifying before Congress about Apple's anti-competitive behavior tomorrow.
I don't know. Yeah, what their case is really going to be. Hey, I've covered Tile for a while. I've never really used them myself because it's like you can only do so much with their like closed Bluetooth network, right? They can never be as accurate as I want them to be. Whereas this seems a little more modern, right? A little more like specific about where exactly all your stuff is. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see. This isn't going to be another big fight. Yeah.
I tell you what, Tile is still compatible with Android. So, you know.
Still iPhone. You can still use it with your iPhone. Sure.
You can still use it. Yeah. I mean, you can still use it with your iPhone too. But like for, again, with Apple devices, yeah. It seems like if you're an iPhone user, it's a no-brainer decision. Just go with the Apple branded accessory because it'll probably sync so much better. Now, just to kind of talk to people recap for those people who missed the show, what the AirTag does. This is kind of a little fob, almost a coin size, mm-hmm. bigger than a quarter size tracker. It uses Bluetooth and has a U1 chip on board, so it uses ultra wideband technology. And you can attach it to your keys or your TV remote or, you know, whatever else you're always losing when you're on the go. Maybe like you're always misplacing a really expensive water flask or tumbler or something. And you can use your iPhone to easily keep track of it. So you with an iPhone 11 or an iPhone 12, which both also have U1 chips in them, you can actually use a new feature called Precision Finding. And Precision Finding is basically this UI within the Find My app that helps you locate more accurately down to like 2 feet away from you where your misplaced item is. And then when your belonging is like separated even further out of Bluetooth range from you, Apple will use the Find My network, which it says is now approaching a billion Apple devices in its network that are all worldwide, just kind of like looking for Bluetooth signals to identify
that thing,
your lost.
That thing is super
item.
Useful. Let me. Have you had a reason to use Find My ever, Sherlyn? Because I know you kind of Apple stuff is secondary for you. You're mainly Android.
Yeah, I haven't used Find My on Apple, but I have used like the Google equivalent, which is like Google's Find My Android.
It's pretty great because I use it to find my parents. Okay, because they are very bad. About texting like, hey, when are you guys gonna be driving by, like coming over? It's turned on their phones, so I can I know exactly where my parents are as they approach my town, and I could get like my daughter and everybody ready. But it is a useful thing because you could use it for devices. If you lose your AirPods, they can like buzz and you can find in your house. But yeah, I use it for my parents.
Basically using Find My as like a Find My Friends. You're using the Find My Friends part of it. Okay, because the AirTags, to clarify, are not meant for tracking people. You're not supposed to be able to drop them on a human being and be able to locate them if you've like an expert.
Oh, somebody's
going to
test
track
this.
Down.
Yeah.
You're not supposed to because there are stipulations. Apple has designed into its system these features where like it's constantly rotating the Bluetooth signal identifier. Mm-hmm. So people can't just use their iPhones to keep tabs on you all the time.
I wonder how they're going to work that, right? What if you stuff one of these into somebody's book bag or purse?
I like how
right.
So yeah. if you stuff one of these into, like, you have set it up with your iPhone and you stuff it. Let's say me, for some reason, I want to track you, Devendra.
Please don't.
I set it up and I put it in your book bag. There are a few stipulations. One, whenever an AirTag has been separated from its owner for too long, it will actually just play a sound. So Devendra will randomly hear a beeping for no reason,
which is also actually something I'm used to from Sherlyn because Sherlyn has pranked us before with weird noises. So yeah,
the other thing is if you're an iPhone owner, you'll also notice your iPhone's also always scanning for AirTags around you, and if it notices an unknown AirTag, which is something that you've never used before, having followed you from person like place to place over time, it will alert you on your phone phone that, like, hey, an AirTag's actually following you around. Mm-hmm. So these are all according to the press release. I had to write up the news post, so I'm, like, intimately familiar with AirTag right now. And Apple says that its suite of features to kind of prevent all this unwanted tracking is a industry first. Kind of not entirely sure about that claim, because Samsung did recently announce that for its Galaxy Smart Tags, which, by the way, also recently came for its went on sale in the US, has a similar feature that prevents unwanted tracking. But Apple's system does seem a little bit more sophisticated and mm-hmm. more baked into the iOS interface. So, long story short, Devendra, is I can't use the AirTags to track you no matter how
Please.
Much I want
to. Okay, that's good. Thank you. Apple has thought of this because I know exactly what Trillin is thinking. You want to talk about the new Apple TV 4K? Because it's I was supposed to write this. So I actually, I was geared up to write two news posts today from this Apple event. The new IMAX, which we expected, and the Apple TV 4K, which was also rumored. I didn't end up writing this one because the iMac dropped right after. But this new Apple TV 4K looks exactly the same. But I think what's really interesting, it has a new remote, which looks a lot like the old, like the last gen Apple TV remote before the like touchpad one. So there is like a circular wheel. It is clicky, so you can click in specific directions, but it's also still touch sensitive. So you can like rub your thumb around the circle pad. Yeah, to scroll, like jog back and forth. It just looks, hey, it's not as small, which is good because bigger remotes mean you lose them. You're less likely to lose them. It looks like it just fits in your hand better. But bringing back that more functional dial pad, not dial pad, but like touchpad, I think is super. Yeah, the D-pad. What do you think, Trillin? Because I know you've battled with the Apple TV remote a bit.
Can we talk about? Yeah, it's not great. I was going to go grab the Apple TV remote that I have handy to show y'all. But, like, I really hate that. I hate that touchpad.
It's not great.
Oh, yeah. God. And it's so small. It's always, like, I keep it. I try to be organized, put everything in a little box. Mm-hmm. And things just press it all
things
the time.
Press it. It wakes up your TV. It's so small. It always needs to charge. It can't even. I hope this new one has, like, the Roku remotes have a button where you could just, like, say, where the heck is my remote? And the remote starts playing a noise. I don't know if this has that. But, okay, so the remote looks cool. And I think for a lot of people, that may be enough of a reason to upgrade. I almost wonder if they're going to sell that separately. Because if I already have an Apple TV 4K, I'm not going to buy a whole new one. But maybe I'd spend $30-$40 for the remote, just the remote, you know? And the Apple TV, the new 4K one, also has the A12 Bionic chip. So slightly faster. And I think the only real benefit there is they say it can play HDR footage at high frame rates, which is pretty processor intensive. So that's interesting. I don't think that's going to really matter for a lot of people. We've talked a little bit about high frame rate footage that is like beyond 60 FPS. Well, I guess even up to 60 FPS, that counts as high frame rate, but beyond like 24 and 30 FPS, which is where typical video and movie files are, that is something we're seeing more in like action, photography, some movies too. I talked about, Gemini Man, the Will Smith movie. We're seeing that more and more. I think GoPros are able to, they can certainly take high frame rate footage, but not in HDR yet. So this is sort of future proofing the Apple TV 4K yet. Doesn't sound like it's something you need to rush out and buy right away, but maybe for that remote. If you really want that remote, maybe you'd want to replace yours.
All right. iMac time. Devendra, this was all you, wasn't it?
Yeah, I wrote up these new colorful iMacs. What is interesting here is, like, I think as soon as they announced these new iMacs, we were expecting M1 chips in the iMacs pretty soon. That was rumored for a while. Just looking at their setup, that's what it is. But we also get a whole new redesign that is filled with colors. So many different pastel colors.
Oh,
they're
gosh.
Very pretty. The new design is also a lot sleeker because it's running the M1 chip. Apple doesn't need that hump in the back for like more cooling and fan stuff. So these are like very flat devices with these cool pastel colors. They look like futuristic and friendly. I think they also start at 24 inches with the screen. So that is the slightly bigger screen option than what they used to have. They used to start at 21.5 inches. No word on a 27 inch just yet. And also, while the bezels around the screens are smaller, right, especially around the sides and the top, lot smaller than before, they're still nowhere near as like low as what we're seeing with some PC all-in-ones. Mm-hmm. And certainly there is a gigantic chin underneath that screen that is just like I really wonder if it needs to be there. You know, even if they couldn't get that screen to be a little bigger, would have loved for Apple to maybe chop that off a little. I'm sure there's speakers there. I'm sure there's other tech. There are other ways around dealing with that tech. You know, it's just not as seamless as some of the rumors we were claiming, we were here writing about. A lot of people said these would have fully edge-to-edge screens, no bezels at all. We're not quite there yet. But hey, new iMacs. The iMac has not really changed ever since the first unibody aluminum one in like 2012, right? So it's shifted a bit. 2014 had the Retina to, like, refresh, but the overall design has been very similar for a long time. So this is new. This is fresh. This brings me back to the early iMac CRT days, back when they were also super colorful then. Because of the M1 chip, it's also going to be very silent. Apple says it stays under 10 decibels. About it produces 50% less noise than the last model, so
that's very quiet.
That's really interesting, and it means, like, if you are a stickler for noise and you just want like a nice PC to stick around your room or something, this would be perfect for it. Yeah, what do you think so far, Sherlyn? Like, this is it's a colorful all-in-one PC. Seems really nice.
I love the colors, but you're totally right that, like, lots of all-in-ones on the Windows side of things have just done so much nicer designs, at least on the front, right? I think the back and the side, Apple has it looking nice. It's got a very flat, minimal design, and the colors are gorgeous. I love the colors. But everyone on the chat agrees with you. The chin is just not great. And I think I believe Bobtown also is saying that they should have replaced the chin with a sound bar.
Which HP has done. We reviewed that 2 years ago. It was really cool.
As the Surface Studio even looks like, well, the Surface Studio I think a different sort of
the device, Surface Studio is like more of the sleek all-in-one design I've been thinking
very
of
very high yeah end. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And someone in the chat, Sandip Makal, I believe, asked if there's Face ID on the iMac.
No, there is not. So we could go over some of the other upgrades. So it has a 1080p FaceTime camera, which Apple says is the best camera they've ever put in the Mac. That's not saying much, because Mac users know they've always skimped on cameras. It hasn't been great. But apparently it has a larger image sensor. And this camera can also work together with the M1 chip to do things like color balance, white balance, exposure settings, and everything. I can imagine, like, if these things are all working together, this will produce good looking video. It also has a 3 microphone kind of a studio array to capture your noise. It uses beamforming to localize itself right to your voice to kind of cut out background noise. That's supposed to be really cool, and I'm sure that'll be really useful for like video chats and things like that. And new speakers, I think better bass, they're saying. Apparently Dolby Atmos spatial audio support with these speakers. I don't put too much credit into that when it comes to like desktop speakers and things like that, but I'd be interested to check this out.
I can't wait till we get to check it out. People are also talking about the size of the thing. Chris Turner, for example, mentioned they were hoping for a 32-inch version.
This is Apple, people. Okay, like if you want the 32-inch version, like maybe the iMac Pro, maybe the next iMac Pro will be that. Although it sounded like they were kind of like stepping away from the whole idea of the iMac Pro, right, to kind of put more emphasis on a future Mac Pro. I don't know. It's this is Mac land. You know, you can only get so big. There are a couple other things we're talking about here. Like Apple saying this M1 chip is going to be 85% faster than the Intel chip that the iMac previously used. The graphics are 50% faster. So again, pretty much what we saw when I reviewed the MacBook Air M1 and the MacBook Pro 13 M1. That chip is super powerful, and it blows away everything we've seen from Intel and AMD over the last few years. So I hope like I get to test this out a little, because I want to see how this hardware works in a machine where you don't have to worry about power consumption, you know, and battery life and things like that. It was the Mac Mini also had the M1, and from reviews I've seen, we didn't get to test that. But from reviews I've seen, it seems like pretty capable, pretty cool. But I know so many people who've been waiting for this iMac, like so many people drooling for it.
It's long overdue for an update, clearly.
Yeah.
Another little design finish thing, I guess, that Apple did this time that was interesting was the Ethernet on the power brick, which Shiva Tech, I believe, also shouted out that it was nice, but they wish it had better I.O. for the Ethernet on the power brick.
I would love better I.O. I didn't look at the power brick stuff especially. I see the note here. What is weird is that they kind of broke up the I.O. into two different models, because so this new iMac starts at $1,299 with four colors and the 7-core GPU, which is something Apple also did with the MacBook Air. The 8-core GPU, the more powerful one, that is $1,499. That's up to 7 colors, but also has more I.O. It has 3 additional USB 3.0 ports. I think that's the one that has Ethernet. I don't believe the other one has Ethernet, but we got to double check all this stuff. That price discrepancy is kind of interesting. I think anybody using this for like serious work will probably want to shell out for the 8-core GPU just so it lasts you a little more. But it is kind of nice that Apple has this, that's a decent, it's $200. You know, it's a $200 price discrepancy there. If you just want a basic machine for kids or something, or for people who don't really demand that much stuff, $1,299 is a good start for this, but I think once it hits $1,000 or something in a year or two, I feel like those things are going to fly off the shelves.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Quick question from Julio B in the chat. Mm-hmm. Does it run Cyberpunk?
No. What are you kidding me? You want to kill this Mac? You want it to go up in flames? Yeah.
This is not a Mac for you to play Cyberpunk. This is Cyberpunk not a
gaming
on.
Machine. Although, Julio hey, B. The M1 GPU, as we've seen on the MacBook Air and the MacBook Pro 13, that's a pretty capable GPU. It's really powerful. So you can imagine like it'll play all the Apple Arcade games that are out there. And we're seeing more and more really interesting ones. I'm playing Fantasian quite a bit, which is a new one from the creator of Final Fantasy. So, these games are looking good. It's just not, it's not games from Steam. It's not the PC games. It's not Cyberpunk. But hey, it is kind of cool that a super thin all-in-one desktop, which your mom or your grandma will probably buy, can also play some halfway decent games.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I can't wait till we can get one in for you to test out. We'll see. But let's move on. There was still some other stuff, I think maybe more exciting for some of the people in our chat. New iPads. Dev, new what iPad are your Pros. Thoughts?
I'm also catching up on this news too, but I think the main thing here is that the iPad Pro for the past few years has been sort of this glimpse at the future of what Apple's laptop hardware could be, right? It is a glimpse at the future of like, what if we didn't have to make a traditional laptop? What if we could just have a really powerful screen, something that is basically a tablet that is more like a PC? These new iPad Pros have the M1 chip, which I think is really, really fascinating, because that means it is kind of like we're going back in a circle, right? So the M1 chip, which debuted on the MacBook Air, was kind of positioned as the PC chip, is now trickling down to these tablets. Looks like the same performance from what I could see, but it really does just kind of blur that line between what is a tablet, what is a mobile device, and what is an Apple PC. And I think more and more, like, I'm tempted by this. Like, I've been looking at iPad Pros for a while. I'm tempted by the idea of getting a super thin screened device. It's also still pretty powerful, but also something I could just take around that weighs under 2 pounds, that could just use to type, just type on things. I think that would be really cool. This seems like for a lot of people would be like a good future computer, because it's just as powerful as the MacBook Air and the MacBook Pro.
I will say that there's a lot of questions in the chat about the iPad. I want to quickly shout out, though, that the highlight, it seems, or at least according to Chris Velasco's news post about the iPad Pro, is that perhaps the biggest change is the display on the iPad Pro. So instead of, this year it's using a Liquid Retina XDR panel, which uses a new mini LED backlighting system, so it can go about like up to 1,000 nits compared to just 600 nits in last year's iPad Pro. But it
That's
is
a lot of nits.
Only available only available on the biggest iPad for now. So yeah, I mean that's nice. I think we'll see, like, I haven't seen this for myself in person, obviously, but like that will make the display just so much nicer to look at, I think.
Sure.
Have you had a lot of experience with mini LEDs?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen a couple of mini LED monitors. I've requested a couple for us to review. I also have mini LED in my TCL 8 series TV. So I've been following this tech and kind of what it means for displays. basically, it is kind of bringing LCDs almost to the point where you get some of the better features from OLEDs and, you know, newer display technology. So, you know, more backlight zones, a better ability to produce HDR and things like that. I don't know what difference it's going to make on a 13-inch, you know, 12.9-inch tablet screen, but I am interested to see for sure. Like, it is, it's kind of sad, though, because I, size-wise, I think I'd rather get an 11-inch iPad Pro, you know, and take that around, make that more portable. But you only get the last-gen Liquid Retina display. You don't get XDR on that, so that's kind of a shame.
So I'm going to get you some questions from the chat right now. I'm not sure your level of experience with iPadOS and macOS, but one of the questions from King Kai is, can you run MacBook apps on iPad?
Not yet.
No. But that's the goal, I believe, and that's why there's this whole...
They're transitioning, kinda happening. Yeah, I mean, you can run iPad apps, only some iPad apps and iOS apps on M1 Max. I don't know if they're going to go the other way. Technically, it shouldn't even matter, right? Like, at the ideal, it should be these apps should be cross-compatible between both. Honestly, I'd love if, like, they even gave you the ability to just, like, boot up into a Mac kind of interface or window on these iPad Pros, because it has the hardware, has the basic software. Like, I feel like that's doable for Apple, but they're so beholden to, like, their ideas of design and what a specific device should be, we probably won't ever see that.
What you just said is exactly what users D-Man and Jedi Mind Trick on you were talking about, which is to give dual boot iPadOS or macOS options.
This is, you D-Man know,
says, stop handcuffing the iPad.
The days of boot camp are over, people. You know, like that was the thing when Apple moved over to Intel chips, that was the big idea. That, oh, also let people install Windows on their Macs and you'll bring over this whole new set of users. But it was also such a headache that most people just didn't do it. So I can't imagine they would, like, go back into this. The iPad's supposed to be easy to use, super fast. If you want a portable, you know, macOS device, let's say buy a MacBook too, you know?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, a lot of people are asking in the chat or saying that macOS running on the iPad Pro would have been awesome. That's Bob Tan. And, you know, a lot of people agreeing. Jose, the Digital Ones Cave, says that is ideal. My thing is Mac OS. The reason a lot of desktop OSs have never really made it to Windows, I mean tablets.
Yeah,
is like you look at what they Windows has been trying to do. Yeah. They just don't work. It's input issues. To me, one of the major issues is input. Right, like without a keyboard and mouse, you don't really have like a good navigable system for iPad OS. Wait, am I confusing myself? I am confusing myself. macOS works best because it's a desktop system with inputs like mouse and keyboard.
Yep.
But like iPadOS has to be designed for finger-based primarily or touch-based primarily. And so like that's why there's still a distinction between the two. I think you can run macOS on an iPad and have that work well if you choose to pair a mouse and keyboard or any type of pointing device.
That's just, a level of complexity we'll never see really from Apple, I think.
It's a lot. It's a lot. That's my take anyway on the macOS on an iPad situation, but everyone in the chat seems to be loving that idea. So maybe Apple should listen.
I love you, chat, because you are nerds like us, but we look at these devices and I have to talk to normal people about these things. And it's like no normal person, even somebody who wants an iPad Pro, like a technical artist or something. A lot of them may not even want to deal with that complexity. They just want to like make stuff, create or consume content. And I think your best option right now is like if you really like that Mac interface, you have Macs. You have really like the MacBook Air, the MacBook Pro 13-inch with the M1. They're pretty much the same hardware. Just, you know, you have to deal with the keyboard. And the iPad is trying to be something else. I'm really intrigued with that something else and what Apple's trying to like move its PC lineup to, basically.
A couple questions, excuse me, a bit more about the components for you, Dev. People are curious about the performance jump from the last model of the iPad Pro to this one with the M1. What are you expecting? Because I know you've had more experience with the M1 chip itself.
I mean, I've done more testing of the M1, so I have not I have not lived with an iPad Pro for very long. I've just kind of sat back and coveted the iPad Pro, so we can look over some specs from... I'm just looking over from Wikipedia.
Some other benchmark results.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, what we've seen time and again with the Apple's mobile hardware is that every new generation of chip is significantly better, but you start to see like major leaps at certain points. Mm-hmm. We don't know yet if the M1 is a huge leap over the last chip. Was that the A12?
A12Z. Yeah.
That was the A12Z Bionic. So I can't tell. We can't tell just yet. That was a really powerful chip. I don't think Apple really needs to do much to really improve things, but we'll see. I can't wait to benchmark these things and see what other sites, how people start benchmarking them.
We have a quick question about the internal storage and whether the base model still starts at just 64 gigs. I'm double checking. Here's another new. I think the base model starts at 128 gigs.
128 now. I'm just looking at the product page. Yeah. So, yeah.
And the 11 inch starts at $799 mm-hmm. for the 128 gig model with Wi-Fi only. And it goes all the way up to $1,899 for 2 terabytes.
Don't do that. Don't do that.
Mm-mm-mm.
What are you doing?
But the 12.9-inch iPad Pro starts at $1,099 for the 128-gig base model with Wi-Fi only. And, it's pretty much in line with what prices last year have been. But I want to quickly point out that these tablets also come with 5G.
Whoa.
I mean, amazing. Obviously not on the Wi-Fi only models, but if you get the cellular model. 5G support, and not just sub-6, but millimeter wave as well, mm-hmm. also known as ultra wideband in some marketing
that's,
material. But
that's
here.
Cool. That's cool. It's funny because we've had 5G devices out for a while. I have a 5G phone in the U.S. I don't care, but you know.
I've been talking to regular people about 5G, and they're all like, I don't see a difference. And I'm like, mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And also people are buying 5G devices and not upgrading their plans to support 5G. So it's also like, oh, you also get to pay more to get this potentially.
Depending on the carrier. Yeah,
depending on the carrier. Hopefully within a year or two. Like, I do believe in the idea of 5G. We both covered this for Lynn. But the idea of like super, gigabit speeds on the go or long, in rural areas, internet that can cover hundreds of miles or dozens of miles pretty easily. I think that's a really good vision for what 5G could be. Mm-hmm. Super low latency stuff. I hope people don't spend too much money on 5G on these machines.
Oh, yeah.
Because I can't imagine.
Well, springing for 5G as a future-proofing thing now maybe is mm-hmm. fine, I think, if you're going to hold on to it for 3 years or so. But expecting a big boost in your speed because of 5G this year still might not be feasible, just because the sub-6 networks that DaVinci was just talking about, the ones that are like longer, mm-hmm. the waves are not penetrating, what's the word, more, they're longer. The low latency thing that you're talking about, they don't provide as huge a speed boost as the millimeter waves near mm-hmm. the top of the spectrum. So those are the ones that will take a lot of infrastructure, a lot of building out, and it'll take years, I think, or at least a year for mm-hmm. the carriers to truly build that type of coverage out. Plus, also, they just bought a bunch of new spectrum in the like midder ranges. There's a lot. You can read in Gadget.com for all of our coverage on that.
I would not bet too much on 5G right now. It is cool to have a 5G phone. So if you don't mind the extra cost and you occasionally want the ability to just get like super fast data when you're near a tower, that's cool. I love 5G hotspots. And I love hotspotting my 5G phone because then you can like spread that wealth a little to other people.
Yeah, and if they if they put the 5G, like the millimeter wave towers in airports on the tarmac where you want to quickly download a Spotify playlist or a podcast episode, that would be the best use of it, I think. But anyway. Quickly looking at any more questions from the chat, but I want to see if we've covered pretty much everything that Apple has announced. And I think we have.
I think
right,
that's today? Pretty much it. The big news
There is also the podcast subscriptions thing that we didn't talk about that they quickly mentioned at the top mm-hmm. of the show.
That's
redesigning
cool.
the podcast app. Yeah.
It's funny because podcasts exist mainly because Apple helped make them super popular with iTunes and the iPod and the iPhone. They have notoriously been bad about actually supporting podcasts very well, and their podcast app has not been great. So I hope they make it better. That's all I can say.
Yeah. I mean, speaking of podcasts, Devendra and I co-host the Engadget podcast, which records live every morning right here on the Engadget.
Not every morning, every Thursday morning.
I'm sorry, every Thursday morning.
If it was every morning, that would be fun.
I would be dead. I would not be here.
Yeah.
But no, it does record Thursday mornings every week is what I meant to say, 10 a.m. Eastern here. And then the episodes go live either the next morning or later that day.
Yeah.
On all your
If you subscribe, audios. you get them early, right? And then we publish the post on the site on Friday morning. So subscribe.
Exactly. It's always subscribe. Fun. You'll get the episode in your feeds on your podcast catcher of choice, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts,
yeah, whatever. Everywhere. It
is. Cool. Anyway, that's where we're just quickly shouting out podcasts, but let's see questions? what other questions there's a quick question about there's a quick comment anyway. Bruno Villaseca saying she's so biased towards Apple. Fam, I use a Google TV and Android phones, and I use a Windows PC.
And you
I
have don't an really Apple TV.
How further away, how much further away from Team Apple I can be, but you know, people are gonna make their own assumptions. Let's see. We've got thanks to Jedi Mind Trick and Demon, and I Can Poop Twice a Day for all replying instantly saying that I'm not an Apple person. Yeah,
she's an Android user. She's very sus in this discussion of Apple stuff. Yeah.
Totally suspicious, very. Yeah. R7M RBLX says I'm just very critical. This is probably true. I'm a very judgy person. Now, Thunderbolt on the iPad. Devendra, what are your thoughts on this potential upgrade from Jeet Das? That is
interesting. I missed that that little bit there. It is interesting because that is they have Intel tech, so they have Intel tech in there to provide some Thunderbolt, you know, support. And they've talked about this too with the M1 chip. That means like you can plug in like, you know, pro, very fast disk drives, devices like that that really connect to it. Thunderbolt monitors, I'm sure, will be able to daisy chain from the iPad. So there are things like that you could do. Not like maybe not the cool stuff like external GPUs, but certainly it opens up a lot of doors, especially for creators and people who want to like do serious editing and content creation work on their iPad Pro.
Another question from James Webster in the chat. So, no AirPods Pro? Not today.
They're still very good. The current AirPods Pro are still fantastic. But hey, maybe towards the end of the year. Like, I don't think they're in any rush for this. And I can't think of too much of what I'd want to change from the current AirPods Pro. There are also a lot of like cheaper alternatives out there too now. So. They just released $600, you know, professional studio headphones, which nobody is talking about anymore. So maybe they're taking a break from audio for a little.
That's true. I forget they did drop that.
They did drop those. Yeah.
Headphones in a bra shaped case for. But let's also not forget what words Tim Cook opened this event with today. Welcome to our first event of 2021. There are going to be plenty more events from Apple for the rest of the year, y'all. Yeah. First
and
up,
WWDC.
I think we're all expecting.
Yeah.
Exactly. WWDC, but the cool kids like me call it Dub-Dub. Dub-Dub in June. No, Dub-Dub is only if you're really lazy to say WWDC. Dub-Dub in June. Google already announced Google I.O. for May 18th. We're going to learn more about some new updates, I guess, from there. We're just starting this year of events, unfortunately. So AirPods, maybe an Apple Watch update too, right? Coming later this year, maybe. We'll see. Devendra, is there anything you wish Apple had unveiled today?
Hey, I mean, we were speculating about this on the podcast, but I do think like their use of like, you know, a lot of graphics just floating in the air just makes me think like this is what their AR glasses are going to look like eventually, like the stuff you see through AR glasses. So I almost wonder if they're starting to like just prep us for that idea, but it's just cool imagery right now. Maybe at WWDC, I want to know what their AR strategy is. And I think between what we see now with consumer VR headsets, the future for a lot of this industry lies in like these mixed headsets that could do AR and VR. And you know, that's going to be the future. I want to know how Apple's going to plan to approach that. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember when we were looking at the invite and speculating what the event could be about. You did mention like AR glasses. It would be interesting if they had said it today.
Yeah,
but we're probably expecting, it's not that ready yet.
We're expecting like the super expensive ones that are made basically only going to be for developers. They may announce those this year, probably at WWDC, and then eventually the consumer ones in a couple of years.
Well, here, now that the event is over, what do you think spring loaded means or was referring to?
Spring loaded with news? I don't know. There are no springs in these devices. It's just really colorful.
Where were the springs?
There are no springs. Very colorful IMAX. Maybe it's the hinge they're talking about on the IMAX screens. I don't know.
Maybe. Yeah, they're very spring colored.
Very spring
spring themed. I want to thank everyone who is thanking me for working hard. Thank you. It's my job. You guys are really nice.
Please be sure to leave nice comments so our editors can see that too. Like, that's all helpful.
Yeah,
so.
because that's all we're judged on, really. My editor thinks the world hates me. This is not true. My editor is lovely. But Young Park had a funny comment that I want to shout out. I hope I'm pronouncing your name right, Young Park. They say, are we all going to be spamming Siri to know when the next Apple event is going to take place?
Sure. It is probably WWDC. We're not going to see anything before that, most likely, because that's so soon. That's coming right up.
Totally.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're here. And Young Park, same person who asked that question, says that they feel sorry for the Samsung Unpacked event next week.
Another one? Really? Yep. I know. I'll be right here. We just talked about Samsung. Oh, man. Okay.
Yes, Devendra. I know you. I think you took some time off. I don't know if you were caught up, but yes, there is another Samsung event this month.
I only took 2 days off. I did not take a week off. So, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. It will be on April 28th at 10 a.m. Eastern. You can all come to the Engadget YouTube channel. If you just subscribe, you don't need to be marking your own calendars, YouTube will do it for you. But come here and join us, because instead of doing just a post show like we're doing today, we can actually watch the Samsung Unpacked event live with you. And it should be me and Chris Velasco, unless, you know, something else happens again. But yeah, we'll have a fun time. Last time around, the event was awesome. For those of you who are here with us,
very,
you know what
very
I'm referring
yeet.
To.
Yeah, yeet, yeet.
Hey, Jedi Mind Trick on you says, shout out to Devendra too. He works hard too.
Sort
this
of.
Is true. Devendra works very, very hard.
Yeah, we're all very
works
dead
very
over here.
Odd hours.
We all do.
Always up super.
We
late.
All do. Yeah.
Does anyone else have questions? R7MRBLX said that the spring could have been the magic keyboard spring. Did we talk about a magic keyboard, Devendra?
No. So there is a redesigned keyboard with the iMac. I think the really interesting thing there is that the more expensive iMac gets Touch ID. Finally, so it is a wireless keyboard with Touch ID. We have not seen that before from Apple, so
yeah,
that's cool, I guess, you know.
Yeah, it's yeah. nice. And I guess those are the springs and the keys. Who knows?
There are no springs in those keys. No,
no. There are not. Bruno Villaseca, the person who was wondering if I'm an Apple diehard, asked, if did they just kill any possible competition by landing M1 on iPad? Does Android have a chance towards the M1 iPad?
No. What?
I can tell you.
What are we talking
no.
about? We've yeah. talked about, Look, so, yeah.
I cover Android tablets. So, like, I'm the one person
one
on the Engadget
tablet.
Team
yeah.
covering Android tablets. And I can tell you that in the world of Android tablets, there are just none. And if we're talking about Windows tablets, fam.
Well, so let's be careful, right? It's not that there are no Android tablets. There are no premium Android tablets, right? There's like Samsung
stuff. There are the Galaxy
stuff, Tab S. But nothing
yeah,
like
Samsung's,
people.
Yeah.
Nothing people want to buy. But there are super popular cheapo Android tablets. So like the Fire
tablets.
There are
tablets, a lot of cheap ones.
Things like that.
Fire
like,
Tab. Yeah.
Those
and,
are
and
all over
the Galaxy
place.
Tab. Yeah, the Galaxy Tab also has A series that are cheaper too.
Sure.
And TCL has made some. There's a lot of like Android tablet makers out there.
Super
Lenovo just
ones.
Came back with a new. Yeah, Lenovo
yeah.
came back last year with a new premium Android tablet again. So people Oof. Are firing back up. Yeah, Oof. I know.
No, no, no. But, so go back through the Engadget podcast archives. We have talked a lot about this stuff, but Android does not support tablet apps very well. So why is anybody going to make tablets if tablet apps are not great on Android? That's at least the one thing I think Apple's gotten right about tablet OS and iPad OS and everything. Yeah.
That's one of the things, and I think to talk a bit more specifically about M1 on a tablet, and if we talk about not Android for a second here, we also have had the Snapdragon PCs on like a Surface Pro X, which counts as a tablet. I
it
mean, like
does
it's
count
not
as a tablet.
Android.
What was the review score you gave that, Charlotte?
I don't remember. Is that like a 65?
That was a failed device. That is what you call a failure. So, hey, I have a lot of qualms about how Apple is handling a lot of things these days, but at least in terms of what they're doing with tablets and what they're doing with the M1 chips, it does seem like they have their hands, you know, their eyes on the prize. Like, they know what they're doing, at least in terms of supporting iPad apps, tablet apps, and the tablet experience better than Android or Windows.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Quick shout out to Bryant Mitchell, who says that their mom recently got an Android tablet and that she has no interest in Apple. Hey, power to her. Good for her. Android tablets, especially the sub $300 ones, have like a very good selling point, which is that they're big screens with a mobile OS.
Mm-hmm.
Do whatever you want with that. Like, watch Netflix, shop,
that's
play
really
games. I like
all you could do.
I know. Oh, yeah. I've been playing I'm back to Kitchen Dash right now. So on this tiny, tiny pixel screen, it's really hard to like hit my orders right. So I would play that on a tablet, on an 8-inch tablet.
Okay.
Anyway, we're coming up on an hour of this post show. I think we're going to wrap soon. I'm just going to double check with our video team to see if we have a hard out. But we're here for more questions if you have any more. It does sound
good. Okay.
We have plenty of time, actually, to sit here and chat
with
you guys.
This is your chance, folks. But also, I think an hour is a good amount of time. Because this isn't like earth-shattering news. You know, it's the IMAX we expected. The Apple TV has been rumored for a while. Let's talk more when we get this hardware and we can really dive into this stuff, you know?
And that's why you should come back to the Engadget podcast. Not to plug it again, but like that's when we go deep dive and do Q&As with you all directly about the new devices that we get into review. Quick shout to Chris Turner, who says, hey, I think this is for you, Dev. So you wore a purple shirt this morning representing the new iMac color? Good guess.
Sure.
The new iPhone color.
Yeah.
Well
that's
done.
Why I did that. Yeah.
Good call.
Or the new iPhone color. Yeah. It's not the a lavender
color
polo. Yeah.
Also purple.
Yeah, that's
know?
True.
So, we're getting a lot of questions like, when am I getting Xcode on the iPad? What would it take to get Sherlyn to go full Apple ecosystem? Mm-mm,
nothing.
Not going to happen.
Nothing. wait for WWDC, though. Like, I am sure you're going to see more and more. If there's M1 on the iPad, you will definitely get some more like actual developer tools and things like that on it.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Young Park says, I am so happy that you guys do the post-show event. I find this quite relaxing and informative. Thank you very much. This is the sort of stuff that's helpful to hear. Sometimes I don't know if any of this we do is helpful. I just wish and
is anybody watching? Is anybody out there?
Let us know, though, like what more you want from us. Like, do you want it to be a bit more structured? Do you want it a bit more loose? Do you want more interaction with the chat? Like, that's always helpful to know. Because, cool. You know, we can only guess what you want.
And also, where can people send ideas for the Engadget podcast? How about that? That's good.
Yeah.
Send questions, send us topic ideas, things like that, that you want us to cover on the weekly show at podcast@engadget.com. That email inbox is way too empty. People should just, like, send us stuff. Like,
it's filled with spam.
Yeah, a lot of spam.
It's just lots of people asking random, I don't even think people, bots asking random stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, you know, it's been nice to chat with everyone. Again, to shout out some of the familiar names you've seen here so far, Jedi Mind Trick on you. We love talking to you too. R7 RB Alex says, what will it take for Sherlyn to show her knees? This is a shout out to a previous episode, which shows you're a regular. I love it. Jonathan Anderson says, more OnePlus Watch. Clayman asks about or said something about the Oculus Quest 3, which would be an interesting one for you, Devendra.
All right.
Galib, I don't think there was an announcement on Xcode. If there was, probably heads down writing about AirTag.
Nope.
Yeah. I think we are close to wrapping. We want to
say
thanks to everyone.
Yeah, where can we find us on the internet? How about that? And I'll use this bit. We may use this whole conversation, folks, as like a special bonus podcast episode. So we'll just wrap it up here.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And before we do that, again, a final shout out from me, Jose, the Digital Ones Cave, D-Man, R7RBLX, Sandip McCall, Jonathan Anderson, Yong Park, Mo A, Mark Dell, of course, D-Man, of course, Sarah, Jane, Michael Lydon, so many of you. Holy crap.
Thank you, folks.
I can't get all of you, but we adore you. Thank you for joining us today. You can find me if you want to ask me anything about Apple and what it would get me to join Apple, I guess.
Never pretty colors. Me, but you can apparently find me. The pretty colors aren't helping. Yeah.
Actually, this is true. Pretty colors.
Yeah.
You can find me on Twitter at Sherlyn Lowe. Devendra, you tweet about stuff.
I tweet about stuff. I'm at Devendra on Twitter, and I podcast about movies and TV at slashfilm.com at the /filmcast there. But check us out on the Engadget Podcast, folks. Thank you so much for joining us.
We'll see you next time.